This is Sarah Bannon with The Versatile Writer. I'm back with Hannah from Pages, Places and Plates, and we're talking about several of the books that she's read over the past couple of months. Now, this first one from Vanessa Westerman is called An Excuse for Murder. What's it about?
Okay, this is a really interesting book, actually. It's a thriller, but with a lot of mystery and romance added in. Basically, we're following the story of Gary. He's an ex-bodyguard, and he lost the love of his life 2 years ago due to a mistake he made while he was being a bodyguard. We're following him, but we're also following a character called Kate. Kate is a bookshop owner, and she wakes up one day to find that someone that lives in her shared house has died, and it's a suspected murder. So she's got really kind of into this. She loves books, she loves mysteries, and I completely relate to her with that. So, she's completely interested in this. And then Gary and Kate's lives collide in quite an interesting way, which links to the murder as well. They start to fall for each other, and it's all about that relationship whilst also a lot of action and mystery things going on in the background.
That sounds really exciting, actually.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
That might be one I'll have a look at as well. So what drew you to this particular book?
I think it was the combination of thriller with a romance aspect to it, actually. I know sometimes a lot of thrillers do have maybe a relationship that's going on, or maybe a relationship that's broken down. That's quite a common one in thrillers. But this one, it's very character focused, and I liked that the relationship was a big part of the story, if that makes sense. It was a very intriguing plot, and it just sounded really interesting.
Both of those characters are coming from completely different angles too.
Yeah, and you do, the book is written from both of their perspectives, so you're kind of following what's going on with Gary's life, and then you're following what's going on with Kate's, and they both know different things, and then there are certain, like, periods of time where you're kind of learning as the character is learning as well, which is quite interesting.
Gosh, it does sound like a good one. So what characters stood out for you particularly?
I think Kate is the most relatable one for me because of the bookshop thing. So she loves books, I love books, and she loves a good mystery as well, and I would completely be like her as well. If I found out there was a murder nearby and it was mysterious, I'd be totally putting my detective hat on and trying to work out what happened, because that's just what some of us readers are like, aren't we? We love to get to the bottom of things. So she was really interesting. There was also another character, she's her great aunt, and she plays a part in an important subplot in the book, it's basically the mystery of the Eternal Wife, and it's some things that happened long ago in her past that Kate's trying to uncover, and I thought that was really interesting as well. So it's not just the main plot that's fascinating, but you've got these sub threads going on as well, which are really, like, they add to the mystery, and they all kind of tie in together at the end, which is nice.
Was it a particularly thick book?
Yeah, it was quite a chunky one. When I got in the post, I thought, ooh, that's going to take a while to read. But it didn't, actually. I read it pretty quickly.
That's not like you at all, is it?
Not at all.
Was it plot-based or character-driven?
It was kind of both. So the plot was central to it, obviously, but I think the character development was stronger than in other thrillers that I've seen. A lot of thrillers that you read nowadays, it's very action, 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 all kind of after each other. There's lots of different scenes where there's lots going on. And while there are some action scenes in this, the main bit is at the beginning. It's kind of scattered throughout, but the main content is really the character development, as we learn about these characters and their relationships with each other. So I'd say it's more character focused, but plot still plays an important part in it. I wouldn't say it's literary or anything like that.
How did the bodyguard aspect fit into it?
That was basically because Gary was a bodyguard before, and he now works for a company which is to do with bodyguards and security and that sort of thing, but it's different to being a hired bodyguard. Mm-hmm. And then basically, I don't want to give too many spoilers, but basically Kate investigating what's going on with the deceased man leads to Gary feeling the need to protect her in some ways, let's say. Mm-hmm. So that's how it kind of all links together.
And that brings in the romance aspect.
Yes, yeah.
Which we all love a bit of romance, don't we? Yeah. As a reader, which do you prefer, the plot-based or the character-driven?
Character-driven.
Yeah.
I always go for character-driven books, yeah. I love plot-based books as well, obviously, but I think as well, because I like writing character driven, I love the inner workings of the mind and the thought processes that characters go through, and I'm quite happy to read an entire book with no plot whatsoever that's just focused on character.
I think you're right, I love that sort of stuff. Characters are so interesting because they can go anywhere you want them to
go. And it's why I love literary fiction so much as well, so yeah, character focused is good.
So that was as a writer, what stood out most for you in this book?
I think, well, it was really the characters. It was just the way she developed them, and I found it quite inspirational for my own writing because I love character development, but I'm not so good at developing relationships within characters in a three-dimensional way, if that makes sense. So something I used to really struggle with was not making it so linear, so getting all the flesh behind it. So that's something that she's done really well, and she's developed each of them so strongly, and then they all link together wonderfully. And yeah, I think as a writer that was quite inspiring because I thought, oh, actually I should be doing this with my characters as well.
That's handy though, that's helpful. Yes. With your own work, that's always a good thing. So what did you dislike about the story?
I don't think there's anything I disliked so much. I would have liked a little bit more on the Eternal Wife subplot, because that was just fascinating. But as far as it went, it was really good. Not really many complaints. Characters were all brilliant. Pacing was excellent, so no problems there. But yeah, just a little bit more on that particular subplot, I think.
It's always good, isn't it, having the author leave the reader for something.
Yes.
Much more, actually. So would you read another book by this author?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Do you know if she's got any more?
I feel like there is, but I can't tell you off the top of my head. But I know she has written other books as well, and she has a column that she writes, which kind of developed into her own website. So she used to review books as well. So I'll have to have a look on there and see what's kind of going on.
Sounds like one.
Yeah.
A keeper. Okay, this next one we've got is Post-Molecular Comfort Food from Anton Ein. Now, yes. This is another book from an author that you've read before. What keeps pulling you in?
Well, so I've read another one by him, which I know we've discussed previously, and The Cleansing, and it was just really bizarre, but in a good way. And I like authors that are a little bit out there, and Anton Ein is a good writer, but he's also a very interesting character, like in a positive way. definitely. So I think reading the first one, I got an understanding into how his mind works, and it is quite different from other authors, I'd say. He's not very mainstream at all. He's very experimental. He loves fiction that pushes boundaries, which I think is really cool. So this one, it was kind of the title alone made me think, well, I've got to see what this is about.
Yeah, it really draws you in, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's so such a good one.
Yeah.
You really do come up with some great titles, actually, in some of the books that you read, but Anton's ones do kind of just pull you in, don't
they?
Yeah,
they do.
So tell me how the title fits into the content.
Okay, so the title, I mean, when I first saw this, I thought, I don't even know what that means. But after reading it, it makes sense. So the book is about a world-famous food blogger called Michael Turner. He is the best food blogger in existence. However, he gets overtaken in ratings by another food blogger and designer. This book is set in the future, so this is where the post-molecular thing comes in, because food is very different to as we know it. Like, obviously we grow our food and we make food out of it and we eat it. In this world, it's all 3D printed because food no longer exists in that sense. And I can't remember the specifics, but something had happened which had led to food production changing drastically. So food is now printed to the exact requirements of how someone wants it. You can create anything. You can create a Michelin star food just by pressing a couple of buttons. And so even though that's amazing, it kind of takes it takes something away from it. It takes the authenticity away from the food. And so Michael's plan is to try and get back to basics with food in a world that now knows nothing else but this post-molecular food that's printed out of things. I don't know science words, but
it's a fascinating idea, actually.
Yeah, it is. It's really interesting, and I didn't realise quite how interesting and conceptual it would be until I started reading it.
Is there a theme connecting this to the other stories you've read from him?
Not as such. I mean, he has a very specific writing style, so obviously it's bizarre and experimental, and he has a very clever sense of humour that comes through, so I think that's quite similar in both of them. There's always a kind of vague dystopian feel. Like, it's not dystopian as such, but it kind of is. I mean, if you're a food purist, it's very dystopian thinking about food being printed. That's just odd. And it did, actually reading it made me really reconsider my relationship with food, which I found quite interesting as well. I really thought it was just going to be a nice, easy short story. That's it, I'm reading. Instead, it was
short
story. But yeah, I was really, I was mulling over it.
How
so
dare it make you think?
I know. I was making breakfast though, and I was thinking, wow, this is like, it just brought so much to my mind.
Yeah. He really relishes the short story. Yeah. So why do you think that is?
I think it's because he can be more experimental with it. So novels, I think, generally have a very strong structure, don't they? They have like the three acts, or the seven story structure, whatever it is called. And I think it's harder to tear away from that. And I think also people are probably more hesitant to read experimental stuff if it's 300 pages long. Because if you've bought something then you don't like it 10 pages in, you're not going to want to continue with it. And you might actually end up liking it, but it's so different, you might think, actually, I don't know if I want to carry on
reading
it.
That's about commitment, isn't it?
Yeah, How much time you have. Whereas a short story, I mean, this one is 42 pages. It's not very long at all. I read it over a cup of coffee and a half, I think. And, yeah, that way I think he can get these experimental concepts across, but it's easier for the reader. And I think, yeah, I just think you've got more to play with as a short story.
You're really straight in there, aren't you?
Yeah.
In there and then resolve it.
You can be very creative with it.
And resolve it or not.
Yeah.
So what do you think about the pacing? Is he fast or slow? Or because a short story, you've got to kind of grab the author, the reader straight away, go straight into it.
Yeah, so. And he does that. He does go straight into it. I mean, the one before was bizarre because I remember we spoke about it, didn't we? It was literally just a conversation was the story.
Oh, yeah.
So that was strange. It was only dialogue, nothing else. So I can't really compare it to that one. But this one, the pacing's quite good. It throws you straight into the action. Immediately you start relating to Michael and you can understand his desires and his aims and things like that. And then it has an arc as all stories do, and it kind of, even though it's experimental, it does still have a nice standard structure to it.
You said that you can't really compare this with the other one you've read,
mm-hmm.
but tell me about the world Ian has built around this story.
It's really interesting, and I kind of wanted, after I'd read it, I wanted to find out more about that world. I feel like he could write more within it. Because it's such a fascinating concept of world with printed food. I just thought, you could make a novel out of this. It's really interesting because everyone in the world is completely fine with this printed food because they've had it for so long and they've never... I mean, I don't think most of the people in there won't have even eaten real food, so it's just the norm for them. So that was quite interesting because I think about like how averse people are to technology now. And I think if someone said, oh, we're going to start 3D printing food, I think there'd be a little bit of an uproar. I think some people would go for it, but I think a lot of us would be like, no,
yeah.
I like my food imperfect. So that was really interesting, seeing what like kind of a different perspective to that sort of thing. But yeah, I think he could completely write more stories in this environment. I'd definitely read them.
Certainly got one one reader straight away. So did you feel the subject was worthy of a novel, or is a short story right for it?
I think a short story was right for that particular story, but in environment-wise, novel, definitely he can write something.
Probably even a series.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. I just think there's so much potential there. I kind of feel this with like the other one as well, but it has kind of a Ben Elton vibe to it. You know, he's done some quite futuristic novels. There's what was it? Something to do with Eden, which is one of the ones he's wrote where it's all set in the future and it's dystopian and it's bizarre. And I think Anton could actually maybe write a novel similar to that in this sort of environment.
I wonder who his influences are.
Yeah, I don't know if he is influenced by Elton, but there's definitely similarities there. Even in the humour, it's very similar.
Wow. So if you're listening, Anton.
He's not a bad thing.
Yeah, if you're listening, let us know.
Yeah.
So if you interviewed him, what would you ask him?
I think I'd ask where on earth he gets these ideas from. I'd like to know what his inspiration is. And I know this one in particular is... quite interesting for him because he does actually do food photography. If you go on his Instagram, he does some beautiful photos of food. And again, they're quite experimental, quite bizarre, quite like bright colours stand out. Not the sort of food photography you might see in like BBC Good Food, for example. Right. It's not standard, it's very different. And yeah, I think I'd ask him just really where the ideas come from and yeah. That sort of thing, yeah.
I think actually when you read certain books and they stay with you, then the visuals or the imagery have a huge amount to mm-hmm. do with that. So he's obviously hit a few buttons in your head.
And this has a really cool cover as well because it's got like a burger on the front, but half of it is kind of digitalised.
Oh, okay.
And it's, yeah, I really like the cover. I think it's my favourite cover actually of all of his books.
If I remember, he's an independently published author.
Yes.
So I wonder how he's gone about the whole process.
Yeah, I don't know, because he his books are translated as well. He does have a translator that he works with, so they are originally in a different language. So that's quite interesting as well. But they're very well translated. You wouldn't be able to tell.
Plenty of questions we could ask this author, isn't there? Let's grab him one day and do that. Okay, the third book you've got to talk about is from Lindsay Coldrick, and it's called A Gentle Hug for the Soul.
Yes.
My guess is it's non-fiction?
It is, yeah. Yeah, a bit of non-fiction this month. Yeah, this one is a self-help book, and it's quite spiritual. I'll admit I was quite apprehensive about this one before reading it, because although I am quite spiritual, I'm an eclectic spiritual. So my spiritual, like I've used lots of things like tarot and all those kind of things, but without the belief behind it, if that makes sense. I don't have the belief that they're actually predicting things. I just find them useful in other ways, like for perspective, I guess. So
for you, it's more experimental.
Yeah. So sometimes I can feel quite alienated with spiritual things, especially if people are a little bit maybe militant about it, or no, my beliefs are definitely true, and I'm accepting of all beliefs, but I find it hard to kind of use spiritual things when they're saying, well, you must believe that there's power behind it and so on, because that's just not me. So I was a little bit worried because there are some things in this book that you would think you do need some sort of belief to use them. But actually, it was very user-friendly, and it turns out you don't need to believe in all of the things in the book in order to gain something from it, which I think is great. One of the chapters in particular is on angels, so which is something that is not within my own spiritual toolbox, but I know helps many people, which is great. However, it was still an interesting read, and I could kind of pick and choose from all the different things included, which I really liked.
It's called A Gentle Hug for the Soul. Mm. How does the title fit the content?
The book is, the author basically created the book after going through her own periods of grief and mental unrest, let's say. So she wanted to create a toolbox that is there to help people in those hard times. And each of the separate things, so there's things like, as I said, angels, you've got Reiki mentioned, crystals, and then maybe things like gratitude, acceptance, stuff like that. So some less tangible things in there as well. And yeah, so it's kind of lots of different things that you can access to make your mind, your soul, your heart, whatever you want to say, feel a little bit better in those sorts of times, give some relief, which I think is really good. And it is an excellent book for people who are going through grief in particular. And Lindsay does talk about her own experiences in each chapter as well and how the things helped her. So you can see kind of practically how you can use, say, the gratitude element, for example. That's something really simple, but you don't necessarily think about it as a tool, do you? It's just a concept, isn't it? But then when you think about it as a tool, it's easier to apply it to your life, if that makes sense.
It does, absolutely.
Saying it, but yeah.
How does the cover art fit the content?
So I've got it here actually. It's a it's a heart just being gently held by some hands, and it's a nice, it looks like a watercolor painting. It's a very gentle, nice cover. I think it immediately says to the reader, this is going to be a book that's going to help me, and it's going to be understanding, and I can kind of take what I need from it. It's not like, you know, some self-help books are like loud and bold, aren't they? Mm. Like, stop what you're doing right now and change everything. And that's fine if that's the sort of book you want, but if you're going through the grieving process, that's probably not very useful. So this it's, I don't know, it's reassuring, isn't it?
It is, actually.
Yeah, comforting to look at.
Now I've seen the cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also the font they've chosen as well, yeah, the colours. And yeah,
yeah, it's just a very nice, friendly book, I think.
Comforting, embracing.
Definitely.
So do you feel this genre is sort of filled to saturation point yet, or is there still room?
I mean, it is, I'll admit, it is a little bit saturated, especially with ebooks happening. I've noticed a lot of spiritual ebooks on the rise, and that's not a bad thing. I'd love to write one myself, to be honest. But there is, yeah, there is a lot of stuff about self-help, and I think there is maybe a slight problem is a lot of people are writing things as if they are experts when they're not. But Lindsay has a company with this sort of stuff, so she knows what she's talking about. So that's good. I like a book when I can see from experience that the person knows what they're talking about. They have experience of it, and they have a lot of knowledge. So Lindsay has both the professional knowledge and the personal experience, which is a perfect combination in my eyes.
Yeah, you do need to have an author. If they're going to write in this genre, you do need an author who's going to be having an authoritative stance on it.
Definitely, and Lindsay does have that, which is really good. I think there is still space for more books like this. And also, with this book specifically, I think Lindsay could actually go into more detail with another book in future. I would really appreciate that. Because while this book is really good for beginners, for someone who already has their own spiritual toolbox, like I do, except I didn't really think of it as that until I read it, so that's really cool. I would have liked maybe a little bit more from it, because I already know, I practice gratitude anyway, I use vision boards, stuff like that. So I would have liked maybe even more practices and things to add to a toolbox as well. But she can always write another one, I guess. That would be cool.
Hope you're listening, Lindsay. And Hannah would like another one, please. How original would you say this book is?
I'd say, as I've said, saturated market. So individually, that information is, you'll find it in other places. However, the way that Lindsay's presented it is quite original, because the whole toolbox concept, I really like that. I haven't seen another book that's done it quite in that way. So yeah, she's kind of taken something that is maybe not so original and made it hers, which, yeah, I'd say is original enough.
So you'd read another from her?
I would, yeah.
Lovely. Now, do you want to mention your details, so should people want to get in touch?
Yep.
Regarding reviews?
Yeah, sure. So if you would like a book review done for your book, then I'm always happy to consider books. I do have a little bit of a waiting list at the moment, so I can't do anything immediate. But if you'd like to get in contact with that, that's pagesplacesandplates@gmail.com. If you go on my blog, www.pagesplacesandplates.wordpress.com, there is a reviews policy, so please check that out as well before submitting, because I do review my genres, but there's a couple that I don't. If you want to contact me on Twitter, my handle is pageplaceplate. Instagram, it's pages.places.plate. And Facebook, it's pagesplacesandplates.
So if they put in all of that, they'll find you.
Yeah. If you just type pages, places and plates into Google, I do come up. I checked it the other day. So you'll find me. Yeah.
Thanks for being on the Versatile Writer again. And hopefully we'll catch up with you very soon.
Definitely.
Brilliant. Thanks very much. Thank you.